I remember back in the 60s, many people would come to visit my father's farm, and we talked Dharma. And there were some hundred of them living in the woods, in tree houses and tents and so on. And then a couple of hundred would come all the time, and we'd have these huge gatherings in which we talked Dharma. And so the local minister came to see me one day. And then Dad loaned us some money, and we put up a big screened-in room about the size of this room. We all just got together and put it up. And we used it for hatha yoga, for reading the Bible, for whatever we did. We had a big fire in the center of it with a fire. It was just dirt floor. And we would gather there. And it was like our darshan hall. So this minister came to see me, and he said, he was a local minister, and the ministers in town heard that I was starting a church, which was some threat to them, of course. And I said, oh, no, no, I wasn't starting a church. There was no ordained minister here. This was just a place of the spirit. He says, oh, well, if that's all it is. Great line. And then I said, would you like to see it? And he said, oh, yes. So we started to walk up the hill, and we had put in an outdoor shower that had an opaque screen around it. I mean, an opaque curtain, but you could see his mind going, orgy, orgy. I mean, somebody was showering in it. And he, I mean, he just imagined. He's from a little town in New Hampshire, conservative. And we came into this hall, and everybody was doing yoga or reading the Bible or reading the Gita. And he said, this is very interesting. And he said, maybe you'd like to come to our bag lunch on Tuesday, where all the ministers, priests, and all from the area meet and tell us about your work. I said, well, maybe better still, why don't they all come up here? Oh, that would be fascinating. So we got bridge chairs around the fire, and they all came up, and we put them in chairs. I said, can all the people here be present? Oh, that's fine. So all these young hippies were present. And we had a fire, and they all sat around. And the young hippies started to tell their stories about what they were experiencing. At that point, one of the ministers said, he had tears. And he said, you know, when I was studying for the ministry, this is the world I hoped I'd come into. But it isn't the world I came into. He said, is there any chance that this is going to come back to the churches? Imagine that. Imagine what it took him to say that. You know? Just an incredible space at that moment. Just leads into my one other story about that. My friend, I have a friend in Washington named Milton Friedman. He's not the Milton Friedman you probably heard about, which is an economist who's won prizes and has been the president's economist. He is another Milton Friedman who's a speechwriter, who at times was speechwriters for various presidents in the White House. So one day he got a call. Is this Milton Friedman? He said, yes. The person said, I'm calling from a church in California. We have a great deal of excess funds in our treasury, and we wonder if you give us some advice about investment. So Milton said, have you considered giving it to the poor? to which the caller said, is this the real Milton Friedman? To which Milton Friedman answered, yes, is this the real church? See, it's all the same thing. An institution starts with living spirit. You started as an institution of living spirit, And then slowly you get calcified with these models of who you are and who you aren't and how it is. And the models start to be so real that you got to fight your way to reorganize them and change the furniture in the room and make it all more comfortable to live in. And you're busy being a personality. And then somebody comes along and says, hey, that is all a dream. That's all a creation of mind. All a creation of, every me is a creation of mind. I keeps creating me. But who am I? I just am. I am. Just awareness. Then you're aware of your personality instead of identifying with it. And you've got to be comfortable in it. But the minute you're not identified with it, it changes so easily. It changes so hard when you're identified with it. When I was busy being angry, I couldn't just give up my anger. You have to work it out. You have to ventilate it. You have to express it. You have to beat pillows. You have to do stuff because it's real. The minute you flip the game, the minute Maharaji said, tell the truth and give up anger. Love everyone and tell the truth. I saw that that whole thing was just a computer software program that had clicked in. This is who I am. I don't love them. I think this. I have a, like the statement from the third Chinese patriarch, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love, here's the heavy one, when love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. But make the slightest distinction, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. You ready for that? See, remember, it doesn't mean, as I interpret it, it does not mean you don't have attitudes and opinions. It means you don't identify with them. I have opinions about everything. But they're not me. They're just opinion. And opinions are things, and they can change. People say, well, how, you're chameleon-like, you're changing your opinions all the time. And then that Gandhi story comes to mind of Gandhi leading the march, and he stops the march after thousands of people are following him, and his lieutenant said, you can't do that, Mahatmaji, and he says, I am only a human, I only know relative truth. I'm sorry, I'm not God, I don't have absolute truth. And my understanding of truth changes from day to day, and my commitment must be to truth, not to consistency. How much have you made the choice the opposite way? Being consistent with an image. That's what I did. See, I was dishonest in order to appear loving. I made a choice to go against truth in order to appear consistent with my model of who I thought I should be. You hear? Is this all right, or is this? I mean, I taught at Harvard, I taught human motivation, clinical pathology, Freud. I taught about Freud, I didn't teach Freud. And I taught all these things as if they were real. It's like Typhoid Mary. I mean, I'm just carrying some horrible thing with me.
Here I am, a Harvard professor, what I say is truth.
And then I told a lie. I just sucked people into the reality of their personalities. I said to them, you are your motives. Humans are the sum of their motives. And they're not at all. Motives are just motives. They're stuff. They're creations of mind. That isn't who you are. Well, who are you? Well, there's no definition of who you are because all those things you're not. It's called neti neti. Ramana Maharshi had a method called Vichara Atma, who am I? And the answer to it always is neti neti, not that, not that, no, not that, no, I'm not that. I mean, you think you're your arms and then you lose one and you're still here. It's like it tests you, like when you're with somebody in a coma. Are they there or not? Because their mind isn't there, but are they there? Are you your mind? When you die and the worms eat your brain, are you or aren't you? Were you just food? Is it all gone or is there anything left? Is it possible that your brain isn't an isomorph with you? That it's merely a vehicle for expressing what you are, but it isn't you? And that everybody's been looking at the product rather than the source of the product? Because they could measure it, because they're like the drunk looking for the street watch under the lamp. He lost the watch in the alley, but the lamp has light. So we look at what's measurable. What's measurable is me. What isn't measurable is I. Me is personality. I is awareness. Me is body. Me is family. Let me read you. This is from Don Juan from Castaneda. A person of knowledge chooses a path with heart and follows it. And then he looks and rejoices and laughs. And then he sees and knows. He knows that his life will be over altogether too soon. He knows that he, as well as everybody else, is not going anywhere. He knows because he sees that nothing is more important than anything else. In other words, a man of knowledge has no honor, no dignity, no family, no name, no country, but only life to be lived. And under these circumstances, his only tie to his fellow humans is his controlled folly. Thus a person of knowledge endeavors and sweats and puffs, and if one looks at him, he is just like any ordinary man, except that the folly of his life is under his control. Nothing being more important than anything else, a man of knowledge chooses any act and acts as if it matters to him. His controlled folly makes him say that what he does matters and makes him act as if it did, and yet he knows that it doesn't. So when he fulfills his acts, he retreats in peace, and whether his acts were good or bad or worked or didn't is in no way part of his concern. That's a very heavy quote, by the way. Extremely heavy, and I won't push all of it down your throat, but it all is right on, but it's really scary because it's so far out, because you've got to go behind good and evil to hear that one. And that's who you are. You are behind good and evil. G. Manly Hall, philosopher, said, he's speaking as God at that moment, he said, "One who knows not that the prince of darkness is but the other face of the king of light knows not me." And it's interesting that the Judeo-Christian tradition is rooted in the holiest prayer in the Hebrew tradition is Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Now, does one include all of it, or is one separate from all of it? Is one dualism or non-dualism? It sounds like it's saying one. It doesn't say one and me, or one and us. It says one. Behind all the separateness, just one, behind good and evil. But do you hear what quietness of mind is required? What non-clinging to a model? Because the part I really want you to hear is No honor, no dignity, no family, no name, no country. Do you see how much juice you invest in each of those identities? Now, this doesn't mean, you've got to hear, that as you are quiet, while it's, this is interesting, it's, even though Don Juan says, it doesn't matter, the fact is, when it doesn't matter, what will you do? If it didn't matter, what would you do? Well, I don't know, I wouldn't do anything. Well, that's doing something. I'll just sit here. Doesn't matter. Okay, then what? Well, I gotta go to the bathroom. So what are you gonna do? Well, I'll go to the bathroom. Okay, then what? Well, I'm hungry. Well, what are you gonna do? Well, I'm gonna go to the refrigerator. Well, nothing in the refrigerator. Well, what are you gonna do? Well, I guess I'll have to go out and work to get some money, to get some food. And there you go, and this whole thing starts all over again. But it starts from a different place. Because you have gone to the bottom of the game where you recognize there's nothing to do, and you're not busy doing it, it just sort of seems to be happening out of nothing. And that's a whole different place to act before you know that than after you know it. It's like the quote, there's nothing to do, so do it. And there's nobody to do it, so be it. Would be an extension of that. That there is an incredibly liberating moment when you say that your awareness is trapped by your own thoughts and you start to let go of that entrapment and you begin to conceive of what it will be like when your awareness is free and you're afraid, well, if my awareness is free, am I going to do things that will hurt people or what will happen? That's what Freud was afraid of, about the unconscious. But behind the unconscious, here we are. The unconscious is just another model of personality that got stuck in there, not as readily available. It got learned preconceptually before 6 months. Interesting stuff. No honor, no name, no family. And yet, I take care of my father, I protest against nuclear bombs, I vote, I write to my congressman. I am a member of so many different reference groups and organizations, and I participate, and I go to board meetings, I wash dishes, I do the thing of all the different parts I play. But it doesn't matter. But what else am I going to do? See, what's interesting is, when you finally let go, you are quiet enough to listen, to hear what in fact is the way that the manifestation happens. You can watch the way the river flows or the tree is growing. It's like when somebody says, well, or when I get into the place where I think, well, I've got to choose between this and this, I immediately, even the concept of choice awakens me that I'm standing in the wrong place. I'm busy being caught in the game. All I got to do is quiet down and empty and wait, and I will experience how it came out. Like, who did he turn out to be? You have a sense of a storyline unfolding, and it's what's called your unique dharma, or your unique route. And you keep feeling your way into it, like putting on a wetsuit or a leotard. Just keep feeling yourself into it, into your unique manifestation on earth. And since it doesn't matter to you, all the forces that are acting upon you and all of the conditions that exist because of where this incarnation is in time and space, who it was born to, its economics, its social situation, its all that thing, if the news that comes into it, all of that stuff, there is an act that comes out of all that. Dad's old, he's tired, he's taken good care of me, I'm his son, he needs somebody to take care of him, there I am. I didn't choose that. When I was making my plans for my life, it wasn't, well, I'll take care of my father. But if it doesn't matter and that needs to be done and it's the thing immediately at hand, I guess I should do it. And the quieter I am and the more I identify with everything, the more all of it is part of my business, and you can feel how you hear finally this line of Mahatma Gandhi, which will lead us into our discussion in the afternoon. God demands nothing less than complete self-surrender as the price for the only real freedom that is worth having. Meaning surrender of who you think you are. And when a person thus loses herself, she immediately finds herself in the service of all that lives. It becomes her delight and recreation. She is a new person, never weary of spending herself in the service of God's creation. If it doesn't matter, then you're just hearing and you're responding to all the different forces that are acting upon you. And you're just like seaweed in the ocean. You're just like that. And the fact is, you were born into a nation state. You were born into a religion. You were born into a family. You were born into a body with all of its strengths and weaknesses. You did develop a personality. That's all the stuff that's giving you the clues as to what the next act is. And you can't process it with your intellect because it's much too much. All you can do is quiet down and intuitively grasp the gestalt of it all. And out of it comes the next act. And you don't even know why you're doing it. I don't know. I don't know why I'm here talking to you now. I don't really know that. I can give you lots of explanations, but none of them are it. They're just little explanations in my mind. They're all part of it. They're all part of it. But there's so many more that I don't even understand. I mean, I've gone to lectures. Like, I remember going to a lecture in Philadelphia, in a small town in Pennsylvania. And I couldn't, nobody wanted to hear me. And nobody listened. And I couldn't figure out what I was doing there. And the next day, I went to the airport, this little airport, waiting for a puddle jumper to take me to another airport. And I was sitting there, and a guy came in, and his plane was canceled, and he sat down, and we talked. And within 2 minutes, we were in a conversation so profound and so deep, we were both going into ecstasy together. And I knew that the whole trip, that that's what it was about. And I hadn't known. I hadn't known. Nobody tells me anything. Yes, it's enough for now. This is fun. Is this all right? Are people bored or tired? Or something? I don't know what's happening. I just think we might as well play. Questions?
You know that much of the content of what you say is true coming out of a state such as a state wherein I am actually that experience. And as you're talking, you know, I feel pulled in a way that the state that I'm in now, bound to my ego or the way I'm feeling, is really, there doesn't seem to be a space in that state to grasp the content that's coming out of the state that you're speaking from.
I hear.
And so I'm actually very troubled.
Okay, I hear. Now, I ask you to notice that the person who just said that, when you said, there is no space around the state I'm in through which I can escape from the state I'm in, the statement, that statement itself, if you will observe it, is the space. Because if you were truly in the state you couldn't escape from, you wouldn't have said that. Even though you experience you're saying it from within the state, that statement that statement itself is the escape route. It's the beginning of what's called the witness. See, the one of the routes out is merely to notice your predicament. And when you have malaise or dis-ease about that, to notice that as well. See, what happened is you started to notice your predicament, and then you interpreted it in personality terms. You said, I feel uneasy about it. I feel trapped. You're describing a whole set of things. These are the phenomena of personality. This is the stuff. You're telling us what kind of a room you live in, right? But the fact is, you noticed you were living in a room. That is the witness. That's the beginning of it. And it's only a little flicker of something at first, and the rest of you is busy being in the room, busy being trapped. If you acknowledge that that witness exists, just acknowledge there's that little thread of something that allowed you to see the disparity and feel that feeling. Then you start to cultivate that thread, and it becomes stronger, and it starts to be something. It's the story it's a Sufi story, I think, of the man that's in a tower imprisoned, and his wife wants to help him escape. And she's at the bottom of the tower, and so she's only allowed to bring him food, and she brings him food with a jar of honey. And he drips the honey down over the side of the turret all the way down to the ground, and then she takes a beetle and attaches a black thread, and the beetle eats the honey and keeps climbing the thread. And it gets up to the husband, and he pulls on the thread, and then to the thread she ties a string, and then he gets the string, and to the string she ties a rope, and he pulls up the rope and ties it and escapes. And that's roughly the root. And the root starts with just your question right there. That was it. Am I conveying to you something?
Take a long time.
You're right, so what else are you going to do? Because you see that as you start to climb into the witness, that you start to get out of time, and then you get to one point where it just doesn't matter how long it takes, because that's just what it's about. It just keeps taking the time. See, I really, when I hear your question, I mean, I don't think that example, when I thought, after I met my guru, I really felt that I was so graced to have met this man, that how could I talk about him to anybody without creating hurt? Because I would convey my intense love and my intense grace, and that would make other people feel that they weren't loved and weren't graced because they didn't have him. So for some time, I kept pulling back from talking about him. And then an interesting thing happened. I talked about him a little bit. And then people came to me and they said, you know the guy you talked about? He came to me in this dream. And he did this and he did that. And I could hear by the way they said it that it was real. I mean that he did. And I began to understand that he was available to people other than me. And they didn't have to meet him physically. The minute I was safe in my assurance of that, then I talked about him all the time. Because I saw that if I talked about him, other people would allow him into their consciousness, as I wrote, you know, these thousand stories about him in the book Miracle of Love. And they would start to get that feeling, and then they would be open, and that open, it's like being a landing field where you put on your landing lights and say, come on in. And then you're receptive. And then it all starts to happen for them.